Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Tortoise. Hello, it's Claudia here, and you're listening to the Slow Newscast from Tortoise. On a cold Tuesday in January, employees from Condé Nast took to the streets. Kept away from the media company's New York headquarters by metal barriers, union members from titles like Vogue, GQ and Vanity Fair chanted and carried signs protesting against widespread layoffs. At the same time, in the same city, the actor Anne Hathaway was in hair and makeup, getting ready for a Vanity Fair photo shoot. When Anne Hathaway found out about the strike and realised that by taking part in the photo shoot she was crossing a union picket line, she got up and she left. It was a glorious moment of life imitating art. Because, and stay with me on this, Anne Hathaway played the defiant assistant of fictional editor Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada, the early noughties film that skewered the fashion industry. And now, nearly 20 years later, here was the real-life Anne Hathaway walking out in support of workers striking, in part, over the real-life actions of the film's alleged inspiration for the character of Miranda Priestly, Anna Wintour.
Everybody talks about the sunglasses.
Anna Wintour has been the editor-in-chief of Vogue since the late 80s. She's a woman steeped in mystery and in myth. She recently took on one of the top jobs at Condé Nast, and with it, the unenviable task of rescuing an ailing business.
She recently had to have a serious business meeting at Condé Nast where she told a team of employees that they were essentially getting a new boss and many of them were going to be fired, and she wore her glasses the whole time.
So the story goes, according to one of those affected, that Anna Wintour laid off dozens of people and never even removed her signature sunglasses. Understandably, as a tidbit, it went viral. Another myth cemented. Condé Nast is a media empire. It was founded more than a century ago, and it has more than 18 household titles under its brand, and annual revenues thought to be around $2 billion. It is also a brand on the brink. Late last year, Condé Nast announced that around 5% of its workforce would be laid off. Like a lot of legacy media brands in the digital age, it struggled with annual losses reaching millions of dollars. And so, they brought in a new CEO who in 2022 said that Condé Nast was no longer a magazine company. It's one of the many paradoxes of this story that the solution to the digital age, the solution to a magazine company no longer being a magazine company, is to bring in an old-fashioned magazine editor to turn things around. The last editor, Anna Wintour. But despite her fame, despite her notoriety, despite the countless interviews she's done and the countless myths that swirl around her. Do any of us truly know who Anna Wintour is?
I'm an ice queen. Mm-hmm. I'm the Sun King. I'm an alien fleeing from District 9, and I'm a dominatrix. So I reckon that makes me a lukewarm royalty with a whip from outer space. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Good gig.
This week, my colleague Stephen Armstrong goes in search of the woman behind the sunglasses, the woman known by the sunglasses. Who is Anna Wintour? And can she save the company that made her?
Oh, okay. I see. You think this has nothing to do with you. You go to your closet and you select, I don't know, that lumpy blue sweater, for instance, because you're trying to tell the world that you take yourself too seriously to care about what you put on your back.
There's a scene in The Devil Wears Prada. What else? That I return to time and time again.
What you don't know is that that sweater is not just blue, it's not turquoise, it's not lapis, it's actually cerulean.
Miranda Priestly sets out the journey of fashion, how every decision she makes impacts what we all wear.
And you're also blithely unaware of the fact that in 2002, Oscar de la Renta did a collection of cerulean gowns, and then I think it was Yves Saint Laurent, wasn't it, who showed cerulean military jackets. I think we need a jacket here. Mm.
And she makes a critical point a few lines later.
That blue represents millions of dollars and countless jobs. And it's sort of comical how you think that you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when in fact you're wearing a sweater that was selected for you by the people in this room.
The global fashion industry is worth $2 trillion, which in GDP terms makes it around the 10th largest country in the world. Financially, it's roughly the size of Brazil. In the UK, it contributes $62 billion to our GDP. And that is more than cars, fishing, farming, music and film combined. That is billions of dollars and countless jobs. That is a lot of power. But Miranda Priestly is based on Anna Wintour, the British-born editor of American Vogue. And that speech seems to be giving an awful lot of credit to Anna Wintour's influence. Can an editor really be that powerful in an industry of that size?
She is the most powerful magazine editor in the world and arguably the most powerful figure in fashion.
Yes, in other words, she can.
I have been covering the fashion industry inside the business for about 20 years, actually.
Lauren Sherman is the fashion correspondent at the Industry Insider's newsletter, Puck.
You know, I'd say that she and Bernard Arnault, who is the chairman and CEO of LVMH, are the two most important people and have shaped this industry from top to bottom.
Bernard Arnault is, as of February 2024, the richest man in the world. He's the founder, chairman, and CEO of LVMH, the world's largest luxury goods company. And Anna Wintour, she's an editor. And this is quite a different sphere. She's possibly the only editor you've heard of. But editor used to be one of the most powerful jobs in the world. Ben Bradley at the Washington Post brought down President Nixon. Harold Evans at the Sunday Times helped end capital punishment in the UK, and he won compensation for the victims of the drug thalidomide. Anna Wintour helped shape a $2 trillion fashion industry, but legacy media is waning. Editors' powers are fading. And the more I looked into Anna Wintour's life, her current role fighting to secure Vogue's publisher Condé Nast's future, and even the way her decisions are now influencing not just fashion, but the media, theatreland, and politics, the more I heard people call her this surprising phrase, the last editor.
For her, in terms of why she's still there, I don't think this was the plan. Even 5, 10 years ago, I'd say more 10 years ago, she said, you know, I'm not going to be the last one here. She actually said that to people, and turns out she is going to be the last one there.
I've been aware of Anna Wintour for a while. Sure, The Devil Wears Prada was a big part of that, but before the film came out, as a magazine journalist, I knew the legends. For instance, she's never late. In Fashion Week, every show runs at least 15 minutes late, and most people factor that in. Not Anna. Do a Google image search. Anna Wintour sitting alone, fashion show front row. I mean, The words aren't specific, just you get the gist. There are countless pictures of her, alone, in the front row, in an empty room, on time, and waiting for everyone else to arrive. The Devil Wears Prada came out in 2006, at the heyday of American Vogue, at the heyday of glossy magazines in America, when Americans were spending $7 billion a year buying them at the newsstand. But I keep returning to that film for one reason.
It made Anna Wintour a celebrity, unlike any other editor, I think, ever.
Some of the film's stories are contestable at best. That opening scene where we're introduced to Miranda Priestly, the fictional editor.
All right, everyone, gird your loins.
Anna Wintour would not come into the office and throw her coat at her assistants, because she's very big on manners and decorum, so that would not be something that is well-mannered.
Amy Adele is a fashion and culture journalist who wrote the best-selling winter biography Anna, published in 2022.
For instance, fashion editors often give sent to them. I guess a lot of editors do in the media industry. I don't know if you guys do. But particularly in fashion, gifts come through all the time from brands, like handbags or the clothes. You know, just like nice things come through. And everything that she gets, she has her assistants find out who sent it and writes a thank you note to the people who sent the gift. So I think there's a level of decorum that is not perhaps totally reflected in the Anna Wintour character.
So the on-screen Miranda Priestly isn't real. But when offered the choice between the truth and the legend, always print the legend. Take our first encounter with Miranda. As she arrives at work, unexpectedly early, everyone rushes around, preparing themselves and the office, and there is a palpable sense of terror. The editor is on her way up. Quick, make things nice, then hide. This is apparently true. Before I explain that story, a quick aside. A few years ago, I was taking my daughters on a half-term trip to Rome. There was some trouble at work, and I really should have stayed to deal with it, but instead, I was walking around the Colosseum, waiting for my editor to phone. Just before she did, my eyes fell on a description of the gladiatorial games. Across the course of a day, hundreds of men, women, and animals would die in spectacular ways. The job title of the person who organized these spectacles? Editor. As my phone rang, I looked down into the cells beneath the arena where the gladiators awaited their trial, and I thought, editors. Terrifying people for over 2,000 years. You were the first person in my life who actually mentioned her name to me. I heard about her from you. I've known Richard a long time.
I am Richard Benson, and in the 90s, I was the editor of The Face magazine. So, like, key to Anna Wintour's notoriety, fame, legend in the 90s was that she was a tough boss to work for, essentially, and she was quite cold. Some people say that came from her dad, who was known as Chilly Charlie, apparently. What really brought to life the idea of her being a tough boss were lots of anecdotes that would kind of seep out from Condé Nast in the US.
There's one story Richard tells of a junior member of Vogue staff entering the long corridor at the end of which is Anna Wintour's office, just as Anna Wintour steps out.
The great fear that the more junior members of staff had was to kind of be in any kind of enclosed space where it was just you and her. So they're walking towards each other. She's thinking, what do I say to her? Do I speak to her? At what point do I speak to her? What do I say to her? And as they pass, Anna Wintour trips and falls over. So then it becomes much worse. Do you help her up? Do you acknowledge it? Do you ask if you're all right? What do you do? So by legend, the member of staff is so freaked out, she does nothing, and she walks past her and gets to the other end of the corridor and just thinks, what the fuck have I done? It's just, she thinks, what have I done? I've just walked past my boss who just fell over. She, for all I know, she could be lying there with a broken leg. I don't know what I've done. She tells the senior member of staff, I don't know what I've done. I was walking past Anna, you're not going to believe it, she fell over and I didn't do anything. And the person says that was exactly the right thing to do. Because what she wouldn't want you to ever do was acknowledge that you'd seen any failure in her. So apparently the person then works there for a number of years and it's never mentioned between them.
If one part of her legend is the Ice Queen, one of her many nicknames is Nuclear Winter, then the other is her signature look.
The memory I have of first seeing Anna Wintour was at a show in Paris. And I think it's a Martin Margiela show. And she was sitting on the front row, obviously. And at that time, I was also sitting on the front row. Before a fashion show starts, there was an incredible amount of hubbub in the kind of arena, and everybody's jostling for places on the seats and so on. But one thing that also happens is that there will be media teams, TV cameras and lights. And you know where the power in the room is by the amount of light that is gathering around that point, right? It's like watching fireflies or something. And it was kind of like a sort of a Renaissance painting of the Nativity, where Anna, with Andrea Leontali, a kind of a sidekick at the side of her, sitting in the middle of the row. But even though she was one of us, the lights were kind of around her. And you didn't, even at that point, you didn't need to ask who she was, because she's famous because of the way that she looked. But that's the time that I remember seeing her first.
That look, well, for most of us, it's all about the sunglasses. We spoke to one editor who told us a story about Anna Wintour dining at a high-end restaurant without her sunglasses on, and no one recognised her. It was only when she got up to leave and put her sunglasses on that everyone realised who she was. And I love that paradox, that she's better known when she's disguised.
I also think she's quite shy, I've seen her do public speaking many times, and she's not comfortable in that type of situation. And so I do think that they serve as a protection, but there is also medical reasons.
Condé Nast told us that the sunglasses are actually prescription, and that makes it even more of a paradox. She is an unmistakable icon and completely anonymous, wearing a disguise to help her see. She's never late, and in interviews, the most powerful editor in the world always gives the impression that her job is a little bit frivolous. Her success has been immensely important and hugely influential for years and years, but perhaps because it's featured in the lifestyle sections, it hasn't been taken seriously enough by so-called serious people.
I think Anna Wintour's influence has been undervalued by the media, and I think part of that is sexism, that we're just more likely to glorify male business leaders. She is an extraordinary business person, and her longevity is remarkable. If you think about very, very successful business people who get this kind of biographical treatment, you know, maybe Steve Jobs, who people compared her to, or Jeff Bezos. You know, Jeff Bezos ran Amazon for 27 years. Anna Wintour has been at Vogue now for 36 years. But I think because her title is not CEO, I think people kind of maybe don't see her first as a businesswoman. But my strong point of view on her is that she's a very, very important businesswoman. She's like the CEO of culture.
The CEO of culture? I mean, sure, why not? Anna Wintour's influence does extend way beyond the pages of Vogue. For instance, there's a story in Amy's book about Hugh Jackman reaching out to her for advice on casting The Last Showman. The Vogue editorial team traipsed over to Soho House in New York, and they ran through some suggestions, although the main one, that he hire Adele, didn't fly. And then there's the Serena Williams wedding.
So Serena Williams told me that when she was working on wedding planning and picking out her wedding attire, she had multiple looks. Anna was someone who she reached out to, and she would send images of the gowns, and she would get Anna's opinion on that. Another one that I thought was great was that Bradley Cooper, when he was working on A Star Is Born, sent her the script and wanted to get her feedback on casting Lady Gaga. This kind of stuff is not in the press, you know, but it's happening all the time behind the scenes. There's not a designer appointment, really, that happens without her input being sought, which is not to say that her input is always taken, but it is sought. I thought that was extraordinary.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
That's a sort of freedom, like an intrinsic knowledge, like you are part ocean, ocean is part you. You have salt water in your body. You are part of this.
Oceans, life underwater. A new podcast all about the oceans and the mind-blowing life within them.
Subscribe now to Oceans, Life Underwater on your favorite podcast app.
Of course, the reason Anna has this influence is all about the pages of Vogue.
I think the secret to Anna Wintour's success and the nature of what she achieved and created probably begins in her youth in London. So she's from a wealthy family, not just a wealthy family, she's from a kind of family of minor aristocrats, really. I mean, very minor, baronets and the like, but still she's from a fairly grand family. Her dad, obviously, is the editor of the Evening Standard.
She is from journalist royalty. Her brother, Patrick, is the diplomatic editor for The Guardian. Her dad was the Evening Standard's editor, back when the Evening Standard competed with national newspapers for scoops and exclusives. One person close to Anna Wintour told us,
Anna's family was always very intense. Her father was an editor, her brother is diplomatic editor for The Guardian, her other brother and sister worked for NGOs and in politics, and her mother was very socially conscious. Anna's interest in fashion was regarded as frivolous by the family, and it's made her more determined. She always felt she was regarded as the unintellectual one.
Growing up with a father that worked in news and seeing his excitement and his energy around breaking news and breaking stories, I think that fed into me a great love of journalism and following a story and creating a story that I feel very lucky to have had and to have experienced, you know, throughout my life, really. It's not a world that I've ever not had in my life. And I think that's what drives you, what channels caring and passion, and hopefully that influences the people that you're working with.
He gave her the most important piece of advice of her life, and she's followed it almost religiously ever since.
Her father told her that she should be the editor-in-chief of Vogue, and she never strayed from that goal. She was singularly driven to that goal from her early days as a magazine freelancer, as a lowly fashion editor in the early 70s. And she went to New York because she found London to be too sleepy for her. And she's a worker, you know. She works very hard. She works a lot. And she's really always been like that.
I do think that her father's work looms large over her work. I think that it's part of her drive. You know, we all have things from our childhood that drive us to succeed or not succeed. And I do think her inner drive is connected to the work of her family and what she represents within that family.
She started on Harper's and Queen in 1970, shortly after the fashion-heavy Harper's Bazaar merged with the high society Queen magazine to create a style and gossip mag focused on the Chelsea set. There, she helped launch the careers of photographers like Helmut Newton and Jim Lee, and then she moved to America, where she worked her way up to become fashion editor of the hugely influential magazine called New York. After a brief sojourn as editor of UK Vogue in 1985, the mothership called her home.
She then ended up being poached by US Vogue in 1988. And that's kind of where the great ascent begins. In 1988, the magazine had a very distinct look that she inherited. And it was about close-in headshots of models. Everything was shot inside. It had a kind of what you kind of call a neoclassical kind of fashion look, in a sense. It was really about elegance.
And then Anna Wintour took over.
She put denim on. Her first cover of her magazine was a Christian Lacroix jacket and a pair of Levi's. In 1988, that was revolutionary.
It was quite remarkable in the world of fashion photography at that time to kind of juxtapose very high expensive fashion with a pair of old ripped Levi's. And that's really what happened to fashion in the 90s. It was that sense that you could kind of team up the very expensive designer stuff with a pair of Nikes or whatever. I mean, it's kind of what, the grunge look had a lot of that in it. And Anna's vision was of creating a magazine about fashion to be worn by women who could afford it. The elegance was gone.
That cover was just the beginning. It was there she really made her name, her legend.
What Wintour understands as an editor is this idea of you have to just change with the times and you can't be sentimental. And because of that, she has managed to remain influential and respected. I would say another big thing to think about, when you think about people who work in the fashion industry, it is an industry of followers and they need someone to tell them what to do. And she tells them what to do. As we know, as journalists, the best editors just know how to make a decision.
Growing up, I was inspired by my dad, Tina, as and probably your husband, as great decisive leaders. And I think the most important thing is to have clarity. I think the people who work for you, they want to know where they stand, what the decision is being made and how they can execute it. I think when people waffle or indecisive, that's incredibly frustrating for the people that work for you.
Most people we've spoken to for this have said that Anna Wintour is not extraordinarily creative and that she'd be the first to admit that. But she is decisive in both business decisions and how she manages people.
She is a unique combination of being able to talk to creative people, but also business people. There are a lot of people, I think, in the fashion world who are super creative and they're brilliant stylists or whatever. They wouldn't necessarily be the kinds of people who you'd want in the room with an executive in a suit who's a little bit more straight-laced. So I think Anna bridges those two worlds very well. I think she's very good at building relationships with people who are important and who can help her.
This has ensured a phenomenal legacy at Vogue. Against all the odds, she has held Vogue's circulation steady at around 1.2 million since its 2007 glory days. Advertising has fallen away, though. In 2007, the magazine's glorious September issue was its biggest ever, at 840 pages, of which 727 were ads. In 2023, however, the magazine has dropped to 10 issues a year to cut costs. During her time there, she's brought through young talent, given opportunities to megastars, and used these connections to create a fundraising machine that is arguably larger than Vogue itself these days. Take the Met Gala. Originally launched in the 1940s as a slightly worthy fundraiser for the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute, the gala has grown into the who's who of global celebrity since Vogue's editor Diane Vreeland became a consultant in 1972. Since Anna Wintour took the reins in 1995, however, it has grown into the red carpet that out-red carpets all other red carpets, and it has raised, in her era, over $223 million. Tickets cost $50,000 this year, and the fashion industry hurls its most outlandish, extravagant, and clever outfits at the celebrities who attend. This year's gala, on May the 6th, is co-hosted by Jennifer Lopez, Zendaya, Chris Hemsworth, Bad Bunny, and of course, Anna Wintour. Last year, she wondered why such an event doesn't exist in her home city. London theatre is on the decline. She is a huge fan, and she wanted to rescue it. And so...
Because some things never go out of style. Vogue World London. Are you ready?
She moved her fledgling live fashion show Vogue World from New York to London in September 2023 to raise funds for struggling London theatres. Opera, theatre, film, pop and more all met for Creative Festival, hosted by Anna Wintour alongside Edward Eninful, UK Vogue's first black editor-in-chief, who Anna, of course, had hired. This was an extravaganza.
She came a cropper with that one.
Condé Nast told us that Vogue World's London show raised around £2 million for charity, with every ticket sold. They also said that the concept from day one has been for it to be global and move to a new city every year. Not everyone sees it that way. Two people who've been involved in it in some way say it failed to capture public attention the way the Met Gala does.
Everyone says it was terrible. No one thanked her for riding in, saving UK culture.
Was this a misstep? Certainly the pressure and attention on Anna Wintour has increased dramatically since she became Global Chief Content Officer for the whole of Condé Nast in 2020. The family-owned company has revenues of around $2 billion, but its stable of upmarket glossy magazines like Vogue, including GQ, Vanity Fair, The New Yorker and Condé Nast Traveller, are struggling to connect with the TikTok generation.
She's in an interesting position where that whole company relies on her, and the people around her are not, they're not necessarily up to the task. So in the next 5 years, she sort of has to right the ship. And I would say on the business side, there are people who know how to sell Condé Nast really well, and they've done a great job at making their magazines brands and eventizing them and creating other revenue streams. But when it comes to investing in the future and understanding how to do that, she's sort of on her own. It's tough. It might be the toughest years of her career, when this is a time when she should kind of be enjoying it and taking a final bow. And instead, she has been stuck with fixing this global $2 billion business.
They've put at the head of their business a woman notorious for building relationships with her own game in mind.
She's extraordinary, very political, very, very punctual at all times. She's prepared to do anything short-term for her long-term game. Schmoozing and kowtowing, she has a political brain. If someone is a threat to her, she's liable to celebrate them, throw parties for them, make them look and feel more important than they are. Then they always come a cropper, and she's always still there. People she doesn't care about, she has no time for, even in the smallest way. She has no gracious behaviour in the lift. She doesn't sweat the small stuff with people she has no interest in. But for people she does care about, she'll go to extraordinary lengths.
It's her relationships that could prove to be the most difficult part of her path ahead. There's a reason why, as Lauren Sherman says, some of the editors beneath her are not quite up to the task. And it's a question of where Anna Wintour's loyalty really lies.
I would say one of Anna Wintour's biggest weaknesses is hiring these editors. She hasn't done a great job of hiring other editors around her, and including how she manages the international Vogues and all those people report into her. None of those people, they're all capable, interesting editors, but none of them are powerful the way she is. And I think she's done that purposefully, unconsciously or consciously.
Which means that when it comes to turning around the business, there's really only one option. Anna Wintour.
For you who stayed on, you know, and saw all these different evolutions at Condé Nast, you know, what are the biggest changes that you've seen as editor?
Well, audiences, Tina. Yeah. I mean, I think if you go back even further, when you and I were both working in London and we felt very excited if we reached an audience of, 50,000 at Tatler, 100,000 at Vogue. It was minuscule, and that was a good day. And now we have all these opportunities to talk to our audiences, you know, in the millions by all these different channels, whether it's coming to a fascinating conference like this one or doing an event like the Met or through social media, whatever it may be. I mean, our reach is just so much more enormous, and it's how you use those different avenues to talk to your audiences that, to me, is the biggest change and the most fascinating change.
Condé Nast have put a lot of faith in Anna Wintour. It's the kind of faith that she's invested in others. Now, some have suggested to us that she's forced them into that position through shutting down the threat posed by any potential replacement. She certainly played the politics of the company perfectly, and she does now oversee almost every part of the business.
The only magazine she really doesn't have any influence on is The New Yorker. David Remnick does not report to her.
That is a phenomenal new level of responsibility for a woman who's already helped shape and oversee a $2 trillion industry.
This seems extraordinary given the criticism she's had over recent years. The power she has now is extraordinary for anyone to think it was a good idea. She's not immortal. Either it's crazy that they have invested so much in her and given her so much power, or she's crazy to be in this position. She's the front woman. They don't have anybody else.
So Condé Nast have put all their eggs in the Anna Wintour basket. And it is not without risk. For one thing, she may be planning her exit strategy already, Amy O'Dell suggests.
I think her challenge is probably figuring out how to exit her position. She's not going to be in the job forever. You know, so we're in the middle of a presidential election in the United States. And Anna Wintour is one of the top bundlers for Democratic candidates. She's hosting a fundraiser for Biden at Paris Fashion Week, which I expect we're going to see some buzz about. We'll probably see her do more, you know, activations like that for the Democratic Party. I know that the Democratic Party really values what she does for them. Whenever she does these things, we hear rumors about her seeking a political appointment. I think we're going to see that all come back up again if Biden wins, particularly. I think it's going to continue.
Here it is again. It's the paradox of Anna Wintour. She takes over, but she may move out. Now, true, a lot of these paradoxes only exist if you're guided by the legends, the Ice Queen, who terrifies underlings, but actually handwrites thank you notes and has a fiercely loyal team, or the fashionista who's consulted by every major label, but then also ignores the chaos of Fashion Week by always arriving on time, or the editor of the most expensive and extravagant magazine in the world, who always brings it in on budget. But ignore all of that for now. This is a woman whose trajectory has only ever been upwards, whose successes dwarf all others in the magazine industry and most others in the media industry. She is a generational figure who has repeatedly shown an uncanny ability to make the right decision. And she's a woman with the wit and confidence to show up at the premiere of The Devil Wears Prada wearing Prada. She is the last, and arguably the most exceptional editor. And I can't help but come back to that idea of the last editor, who carries so much on her slim shoulders, including even the hopes of those protesting against her management decisions.
She wakes up ready to work. The impression I got of her is that she's still hungry, even though she's 74 and she's been doing this for so long. And it's kind of remarkable. And now we see her as Condé Nast, unionized Condé Nast workers are butting heads with the company. We see these people, you know, sort of looking to her for a way forward. I think that's remarkable. Like she really wrote it out, and she's perceived as probably the main executive there. And I would believe that this is true, who wants to do quality, good work. They see her, from what I've read, as kind of an advocate. And I think that's really remarkable.
Thank you for listening. As ever, if you enjoyed the story, please do leave us a review or follow us. The episode was reported by me, Stephen Armstrong. It was produced by Matt Russell. The sound design was by Dominic DeLaghi, with artwork by John Hill. The show's exec is Matt Russell, and the editor was Jasper Corbett. Out.
Tortoise.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way.
Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
That's a sort of freedom, like an intrinsic knowledge. Like, you are part ocean, ocean is part you. You have salt water in your body. You are part of this.
Oceans, life underwater. A new podcast all about the oceans and the mind-blowing life within them.
Subscribe now to Oceans, Life Underwater on your favorite podcast app.